Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Many. So I have so much stuff here, and I don't really know how to organize or start. So we're just going to go.
Let's go, Paul.
We're just going to go.
We'll go.
So one of the first things Vrabel says yesterday about the Raiders are they've thrown to tight ends and running backs 200 times, which sounds like an enormous number, but lo and behold, there it is. How do you then approach stopping that without opening yourself up to getting killed by the wide receiver?
Yeah, and that's a very pertinent question, and it really is. I think what's happened when you look at it, Paul, Gruden was counting on Antonio Brown being there, all right? And now once he's not there, he has not gotten the production out of that wide receiver group that he wants. And John Gruden, his offenses, ever since he was a coordinator there at Philly, you know, he will incorporate base personnel a lot into what he does, but he deploys them in so many different looks that he tries to confuse you by his looks, but still his concepts are the same. Now, in my opinion, to answer this question, he drafted the best back in this draft last year in Jacobs. He can run the football. He can run the football. And I think Waller has turned out to be a better tight end even than he probably thought he had when he had him. So, because he's not getting the production out of the wide receivers, he's still going to run the football. That opens the play action. But John Gruden is probably one of the most pure West Coast coaches still left in this league as far as the way he deploys tight ends and running backs, you know, throughout the downs, first, second, and third down. And I think all of those instances and all of those examples I just said have led to where they are right now with that much attention through the air to running backs and tight ends.
Greg Cosell hit on that. Some of what you were saying yesterday, he said the Raiders' offense has an illusion of complexity. Then it runs basic stuff. It's kind of a West Coast approach, but sometimes you can ignore a lot of that.
Yeah, and I'm going back now to my defensive coach days and my coordinator days, playing Sean Payton. Those guys that came out of that genre and that school, they give you so many different looks that if you try to chase all of their deployments and try to match up, that's what they want. They try to work off of confusion, but it's the term that we use is same as. So if you just put X's up on the board when you're getting ready for the game plan and you tell your guys, look, let's disregard what the numbers are. I want you to look at the X and look at where they are. Now let's look at the concepts. Let's defend the concept rather than worrying about the deployment. And so once you get that down, once you start to defend the concept and don't worry about the personnel deployment, then you've got a little bit of a chance to crack the code on it. And once you start dialing in, I mean, I can give you a real good example that I think most of our listeners, you know, will remember. I know you guys do know is when Keith Bullock did the Mr. Monday Night thing down there at New Orleans. They had a concept that they were running constantly, you know, that deep dagger concept out of a lot of different types of looks. And we worked on it, you know, Keith Bullock and myself and Jim Schwartz, we worked on that all week saying, look, if this split is this, regardless of who it is in this 3-by-1 look, this is what they're running. And if this complimentary route flashes in front of your face, the deep dig is coming behind you, regardless of who the personnel are deployed. He picked three passes off with that. He picked three of them off and it was all different types of personnel looks, but he understood the concept. That's to my point as to what you need to do when you defend this. That's what I did. That's what we did. That's what I've been around with this. Now, John Gruden has evolved this some, but Greg Cosell was telling you right in that this West Coast, when you start looking at it, they do try to give the illusion that there's a whole lot out there. If they get you chasing the illusion, then they've got what they want.
I'm not remembering exactly what the Titans have done against tight ends this year. I know Kelsey is always a handful, is the best that they've seen. Waller has gotten it all together this year, obviously doing a great job for them. Oakland tight ends have gained 527 yards after the catch.
No, that's a lot. Season. No, that's a lot.
So what's the plan for, hell, never mind slowing the receptions, just getting, stopping him after he gets the ball?
Well, most of the tight end
527 yards. I don't know if the Titans have 527 yards of I mean, tight end catches.
That, no, that's a lot. What's he got, 66 catches?
Got a Delanie Walker season already.
Yeah, he's got 66 catches. And, of course, you have to be getting a lot of targets to be able to get that. But normally when you've got tight end matchups, you know, and I know during my career I've defensed some really good tight ends, you've got to decide how you're going to handle them depending on down and distance and depending on situational football as to what it is. If you're going to man them up, then you're going to have somebody that is able to, if they're in man-to-man, be able to physically deal with them down the field, all right? If you've got a man problem with them, then what you're going to try to do is vice them somehow. You're either going to vice them with a linebacker underneath them and a safety over the top, or you're going to vice them from inside out. I mean, we did that a lot with Tony Gonzalez. You know, when we used to play Gonzalez, you know, we would vice where we'd put, you know, guys inside and outside on him. So basically, and then you had secondary help with a safety over the top. Eventually. Okay, so I don't know what they will plan for this guy, but clearly he is a focal point of what this offense is when the ball is in the air. And the other thing is with tight ends that are having big years, most of them are run after catch, and so spot tackling is vital against tight ends.
You talked about designing things for Antonio Brown and then not having him. Tyrell Williams, not a lead guy and now kind of asked to be a lead guy. Is he miscast?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, Tyrell Williams, I think, is a perfect number two in this league. And there's nothing wrong with being a number two. I mean, it's a professional wide receiver. But in some of the things that West Coast thing does, I mean, there is a primary receivers. I mean, just put back in your mind, if you know, you guys know, our listeners, just try to put back in the West Coast guys. You can always figure out who the top receiver is because there are a lot of things designed for that guy. When you do lose that guy and your next guy has to step up, well, then maybe he's not able to execute quite what they want in that. Clearly, that's what's going on, you know, with the Raiders. I've watched about five of their games, and you see some up and down play in them. But what you do see is you do see that Grudes has settled in on. He trusts this running back, and he trusts this tight end, and his offensive line. I mean, they are built to run the football. Because they look like typical Raiders coming off the bus. They've got some big, big units up there on that offensive line.
Just getting started with the scouting report for the Titans and the Raiders with Coach Mack, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, online at fbhealthplans.com. More when we return on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, home of the 2 for $5. Wrong and what has gone right for this Oakland team in the most recent weeks?
Yeah, well, they're still being able to run the football, but David Carr hadn't played very well. Okay, he hasn't played very well, and then plus, you know, defensively they've given up some points. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really have, and this offense, we just talked about it in our last segment. This offense is really not equipped right now to come back from huge deficits. You know, it's just really not. I mean, if you can get the score separated on this group early, then you've pretty much got a good chance of laying back and then letting them try to maneuver down the field, because they don't really have anybody that's going to take the top off of anything. And so if you fall behind as quickly as they've fallen behind in these games, and then plus, you know, the quarterback, because of some of these instances they've been put in behind the chains, has made some not good decisions. Not good decisions, not good throws. They can still run the football. So this team, when you look at this Raiders team, my personal opinion, when you watch it on tape, they're built to play close ball games because they are a physical football team. They're built to play a close ball game, but you get the score start to being separated, then they're playing right into your hands.
So you look at that offense, and it's running back and tight end is where they're making their hay. Is that a good matchup for a team in the Tennessee Titans who are banged up in the secondary?
Well,
right now.
And you make a real good point, David, because this when you start looking at it, especially with you know, what happened up there at Indianapolis with the secondary that Dean Pease was rolling with in the, you know, at the end of that ball game, and Dean Pease and that defensive staff and those defensive players, guys, they made some really, really key second half adjustments with what was going on defensively. Now, they've got a week to work with that, and it remains to be seen who they will have. Mm-hmm. But to your point, yes, I mean, it helps when you're not going against, you know, a receiving group that's been taking the top off of everybody throughout all of this, you know, all this time. Now, you can still be beaten on the outside. You can't fall asleep with it. But, I mean, just being honest, when you get to this time of year, injuries play such a big part that you not only, I mean, you study schemes, but you also start to attack people because you're probably going to be playing with and against some backups at this time of year.
Let's say that Adoree and Sims are out. How much can they do with Tremaine Brock in short order? He's a guy who's played, you know, 10 years in the league. I wonder how much can they do with him, and how much can he be a part of all the disguising that they do? Is that a complicated
thing? The disguising part of it would probably be the one that would probably be least slotted in to begin with. Now, concept wise, he's been in the league, and that's a plus.
They just cover this
plus.
Guy on the boundary.
That's a plus concept wise. He's been in the league. He's been with some defensive people that they've run. I mean, he hasn't just been places where they just do, you know, one or two things. So he'll understand the concepts, you know, pretty quickly. But when you start disguising as well as they do it as well as anybody in the league. I think we've all seen that. We know that. I mean, it's been evidence. That takes a little bit of time to get into that flow. But as far as knowing the concepts and what's going on, that's why this time of year, whenever you have to pick somebody up, you look for somebody that has experience because, and we're fortunate in the pickup with him, in my opinion, because he's been with the team since till Monday. And so he's not coming in cold off the couch, you know, from not having been playing football. And so he'll be with the concepts. Now, to expect him to come in and in 3 days fit in as smoothly as this group operates together when they're all together, this is one of the smoothest operating groups together as far as disguising things, I mean, that there is in the league. I mean, honestly, because I watch a lot of tape and I've watched these guys for a long time. But concept-wise and performance-wise, he'll be able to help.
So Josh Jacobs, a rookie, probably their offensive MVP. Alec Ingold is a rookie, their fullback. Defensively, three rookies, including their very high pick, Cleland Farrell, Max Crosby on the opposite end of the defensive line from him, Trayvon Mullen, a cornerback. What's Farrell done? And Crosby on the other end of the line looks to be better.
Well, Crosby has been more productive this year. I mean, let's just be honest with it. You know, and really, Farrell, Paul, I mean, remember the draft? Farrell's doing about what I thought he would do. You know, I mean, he's a real solid player. He was never a flashy player at Clemson.
He had a lot of talent around him,
and that's my point. He's a good player. He's a good fundamental solid player. The guy that is the wild card in the whole thing is Max Crosby. You know, a kid coming out of Eastern Michigan. He's from Colleyville, Texas, and so you know that. I mean, he wasn't all of that coming out of high school. I mean, if you're from Colleyville, Texas, which is around Dallas, you're passing up a lot of schools to get to Eastern Michigan. Mm-hmm. All right, but he's one of those guys that developed late. And what he does do and what he did at Eastern Michigan, he plays really, really fast. I mean, he is a frantic player. I mean, this guy, he's moving all the time. Brinson Buckner, you know, said one of his comments, and Brinson played in the league for a long time. He's coaching that defensive line early on, you know, when this kid started having success. You know, he said, I've never seen a guy do so many wrong things and have so much success. So he is not, you know, he's not a real polished player right now, but he is playing fast and he is productive, and he's a handful for the whole game. He doesn't stop, and they started to move him around some too, you know, to be able to utilize and use that. Farrell, you know, and Farrell is not a disappointment in my opinion, because he's exactly what I thought he was going in there. And I like Trayvon Mullen coming out. You know, Trayvon Mullen's got some ability to play. The thing that Max Crosby has given them, though, he's given them, I think, a piece as far as pressure-wise that they probably really weren't anticipating when they drafted him.
Did you hear Vrabel's line about the Coliseum yesterday?
Did not.
He said, so Jim Wyatt asked him, you know, and he was looking. I mean, it was a fine fishing line. He was looking for to see if Vrabel had any good stories about having played there. But Vrabel kind of cut him off. He said, Mike Keith asked me about this on Monday. He said, you know, years from now, I'm gonna say to people, I'm going to say, you remember that last game there? I coached the one before that.
It was a good one.
It was funny sitting in there.
Yeah.
When Mike was asking the question, I could see in Vrabel's eyes the wheels were turning. Like he automatically had that response ready to roll when Mike asked him that question.
I coached the net. That's a good line.
You'd been there plenty.
Yes, a lot.
I mean, the dirt is one thing. And Vrabel said that the dirt is the thing that he remembers. I imagine it's that way for a lot of guys that played there. What maybe was the most memorable game or moment that you had in that building, which was not a fun building to be in?
No, but you know, let's stop. Let's go with that first. Let me go with that comment about not a fun building. It is a fun building. It is a fun building because it's
A buffer.
No, it's so live. It is live and it's real. I mean, there the atmosphere there. I mean, when I of course we played it. We used to play Oakland quite a bit, even in the preseason when I was at Arizona, because it was an easy get, back and forth. And then had a great game there, an overtime game one when I was the head coach against Gruden, when he was the head coach there, that David Boston scored against Woodson the last play. I mean, we had a hell of a game, and when we met at midfield, Gruden said, "Mac, this was a hell of a football game," and it was. I always liked going there as a visiting coach, because I would go down to the black hole, before the walk down there. Because guys, seriously, Rob
today
Moore,
you're outfitted,
and
they accepted you.
They did.
It was wearing some red back then.
They accepted me. I would go down there because everybody that's dressed up down there. I mean, those people are doctors and lawyers, and I mean, they're legitimate people, but they just dress up for Halloween for a game, and they go absolutely nuts. But they're sophisticated fans. They've been doing this for a long time. Rob Moore, who is the receiver coach, he coached there, and he and I were talking on Monday, and I was telling he was saying, "Mac, how'd you like going in there as a visiting team?" Because he was he coached there. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I liked it. I love those people. He said, yeah. He said, I used to ride the train in on Saturday down there with some of those people. They would be dressed up on Saturday to go down to start. Because when you go in the parking lot, guys, it's like Mad Max and the Thunderdome. I mean, all those barrels of their fire coming out of those barrels. And I mean, you can get a contact high just driving through that parking lot. I mean, it's unique. I mean, the plane surface and all of that stuff, it's bad. It's bad. The locker room. The only other thing I can compare it to for badness and for just as far as awfulness is the old Cleveland Stadium that was a baseball locker room that you had to walk up three flights of stairs that were little. I mean, it was a baseball locker, visiting locker room, baseball, that you walked up three stairs winding to get to, and there were no lockers. There were nails on the wall. And then as soon as the first thing we'd ever do going into that Cleveland locker room is the equipment managers would start building a little dam with towels, because as soon as somebody turned on one shower, the drain was in the middle of the floor outside. God. So anyway, the amenities there, zero. Atmosphere, I loved it.
So how you're not going to replicate that once this team moves?
That's
going to have to be to the detriment of the team, isn't it?
Well, it's
going to be a different environment in Vegas.
No.
David, wouldn't it be great if they had a visitor's locker room in the middle of this palace?
Yeah, there you go.
Nails on the wall and a drain in the middle.
No. That was Cleveland. This one's bad because it's cramped. It's a baseball.
Yeah, the sewage backs up all the time.
The sewage backs up. I mean, you've got issues there, but they're going to be in a palace. But I promise you this, that freeway between L.A., Oakland, California, all the way down to Vegas, these guys will be dressed up, be driving down the highway just like this. They will be there, but you will never, ever replicate the black hole. Never. Because it added to the aura of the just win, baby. I mean, it really did. And, I've been in this league long enough. I coached when Al was on the sideline in his white jumpsuit. And, I mean, it was pretty interesting.
The black hole sucks everything in. And so when that last game arrives, it will fold in on itself and disappear.
I like that analogy. And it really will. And it will be the end of an era. I promise you that.
We saw one coaching change this week in the NFL. We will ask Coach Dave McGinnis about that when we return right here on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, home of the 2 for 5.
Carolina, it's hard for any coach to really survive a change in ownership. It got seemingly a fair shake from Tepper. But it would seem to me he's a good candidate for the right kind of team, a measured guy who did some good things with that team. I know you know him well. What do you think about how this went down and what's next for him?
Well, let's start out with, you know, how well I know him, because, you know, I coached Ron, you know, for 7 years there in Chicago. You know, Ron, when I first got there, Ron Rivera was a huge Mike Ditka favorite. You know, Mike Ditka, you know, had everything to do with drafting him when they drafted him out of California, because he really liked his toughness. He liked what he was about. Ron Rivera is as smart a football player as I've ever coached, you know, and have been around. But then, you know, he was a backup middle linebacker behind Mike Singletary. So he's, you know, you're not going to start in front of Mike Singletary. And so, he was my primary backup, you know, in the early years, you know, for every position, because he knew every position and he knew where everybody was. And he was also, he was the go-to guy. As soon as young guys would come in the linebacker room, that was their go-to guy, because they were a little bit intimidated by Singletary, but Rivera was their go-to guy. And he could, so you knew, and he was even preparing to coach, you know, while he was playing, and a wonderful human being, really smart. I mean, I knew he was going to be a successful coach. In fact, you know, when I was head coach of the Bears for 6 hours and didn't know it for three, Ron was up there working for the Bears at the time in their communications department. That's right. What he was doing. He was in their community relations department, and I was going to hire him. I was going to put him on the coaching staff. You know, all right. Well, you know, of course, after my 6 hours was up as a head coach of the Bears, well, then, but he went on and has done very well in his coaching career. Now, let's go to what's happened here. You know, once Tepper bought that team for $2.2 billion or whatever it was, you knew sooner or later he was going to want to get his people there throughout that organization. And he's already started that. And then, you know, Ron has had really good success there. I think one of the things that probably, you know, Ron has had good years, bad years, but his players, he is one of the most dialed in to the players, I think, of probably any coach in the league. He will have no problems getting another job. As far as the way Tepper handled it, I mean, I saw what he said when he came out and said, look, I was going to make a change, and I didn't want to do it behind his back, you know, and to have him finish out knowing that he was a lame duck and starting to hear, because the grapevine is pretty thick in the National Football League, coaching circles, agent circles, et cetera, you know, knowing that the change was going to be made and he would still be coaching. You know, if he was really seriously going to do that, you know, I would have preferred, if I were Ron, that Tepper calls me in and say, look, I'm going to make a change. What do you prefer to do? Okay. That to me, if you really want to respect the head coach that's done a lot for that organization and is really, and again, your time runs out, you know, in the National Football League. I mean, there's not a coach that's ever coached as a head coach in the National Football League. You got one of them sitting here that you don't do everything you can, but you're going to lose your job sooner or later. Somehow something's going to happen. But to me, if he was going to do that, I personally, wish he would have handled it like that. I don't own the team, so he handled it like he did. Ron Rivera handled it with a lot of class, like he did. You know, was a little salty, you know, and rightfully so. I think he'll coach in this league again very quick. He's got another year left on his contract. I have a call into him right now. I'm sure he's got a lot of them, and I will talk to him. But Ron Rivera will coach again in this league as soon as he wants to.
What would you have chosen if an owner called you in that scenario?
Like I said, let me finish out the year. Yeah. Let me finish out the year. You know, let me finish. I mean, towards the end of my tenure there as a Cardinals head coach, you know, because I mean, we had a lot of different circumstances, you know, that's a whole nother show. But anyway, you know, you kind of knew it was, but you want to finish out what you start, because, and you want to finish it with your guys, you know, you really do. And so, to me, that's how I would have preferred it. I don't own that club, but I've known that has happened before in the league. Other owners have done that for coaches. If they knew they were going to make a change, they have called them in and said, look, and it's probably, it wasn't news. It wasn't news to Ron. All right. But it's just he would have preferred to finish the year out because most coaches want to finish at least what they start.
The Raiders, historically, hugely penalized team. They made a little progress last year, if I'm remembering correctly. They've been flagged 21 times for 10-plus yards on defense this season, tied for the most in the league. Is it in the building? Is it stitched into the uniforms? I'm sure Gruden has a different approach than all of his predecessors, yet there it is again.
Something about putting on those hats.
Yeah, and again, I'm glad you brought that up, Paul, because that's a pretty salient point for this game too. The Titans can't get caught up in that. You know, you can't get caught up in that. You can't. We've talked about the atmosphere. We've talked about, you know, everything that goes with, you know, Just Win Baby and the Raider Nation and all of that stuff. You know, the persona and everything that goes with that. You can't get caught up in that. I've coached in that stadium, and you can't get caught up in that atmosphere because it gets live and it really starts rolling. Clearly, they're the second most penalized team in the league this year, you know, right behind Jacksonville. And so you know what kind of game it is going to be going in. We know who the official is in this ball game, and he's known to call, you know, a pretty tight ball game with a lot of flags. So the Titans cannot, David, get caught up in that atmosphere. They cannot get caught up in any of that. They just got to play their game. And if the Raiders want to continue down that path, let them, because it's to their detriment. You can't allow it to be to your detriment.
So before you get out of here, we talked a lot about the Raiders and their offense and the struggles that they've had over the course of the season. Defensively, Ryan Tannehill playing at a clip that no other quarterback in the league is playing at right now. What will that Raider defense show him that maybe he hasn't seen now that there's been weeks after week after week of Ryan Tannehill film with this offense?
Well, I can tell you, you know, they're going to load it up and try not to let Henry be that guy. They're going to make Ryan Tannehill and this passing game and Arthur Smith prove that you're going to be able to do something to them through the air. They are not. They're going to load up because, you know, they're still in the playoff hunt. I mean, we're sitting here talking about them, a lot of things, you know, negatively, you know, that they've put, but they're still in the playoff hunt. So this is a big, big game for both teams. And they defensively, and again, and John Gruden has gone in there to that defensive staff and said, I don't care what happens, but we can't let Derrick Henry control this game and walk out of here with a big, big day against us and our offense never getting a chance to get a hands on the ball during the course of – so I can promise you this, regardless of what they've done in the past, David, they will load up on this run. They will load up on this run and take their chances with the play-action pass and the air game. I know that for certain.
Coach Mack, it's been fun.
You guys are – this is great. No, this is great with you guys. And just so that Hutt and Chad know, we do have their game on television right now.
Yeah.
Right now we're watching Divorce Court, but they're coming on. They're coming on right after Divorce Court here. So
they're coming on.
They're still alive in the studio. See you, David.
Coach Mack, appreciate it.
All right,
Coach,
see you, Paulie.
Join presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans online at fbhealthplans.com. If you want to hear more of Coach Mack, you can do that by downloading the official Titans podcast. You can look for the OTP wherever you download your podcast. So got the best scouting report from Coach Mack that you're going to hear between the Raiders and the Titans this week. We got the best analytics man, the best number man in the business coming up to join us. We're going to talk Titans and Raiders and the NFL and more with Warren Sharp of SharpFootballAnalysis.com. That's next on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, home of the 2 for 5.